You are listening to episode 240 of the Mad Chatters podcast, March 18th, 2020.
Most everyone's mad here.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mad Chatters podcast, your very important date with the happenings, or the not happenings, at Walt Disney World and around the Disney universe. My name is Derek, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Jeremy.
Hey, I just want everybody to know that we on the Mad Chatters are practicing social distancing. Usually when we record, I sit on Derek's lap, but today I'm on the other side of the table.
Yikes. Okay, so we've got a lot to talk about today, and we're going to bring on a special guest for that. But let's go ahead and start by addressing the elephant in the room. For the first time ever, all the Disney parks worldwide are closed. And of course, it's very weird for everyone, but we're a Disney podcast, so we're going to talk about Disney. And Jeremy, I want to know from you, as an Orlando local, what's the vibe like among locals and among all of your cast member friends, etc.?
It's weird. I'm not going to lie. It's weird. And I was on property last night because even though the resorts closed, the parks closed on Sunday night. That was the final operating for parks. Resorts in Disney Springs are staying open through the end of this week, I believe. And it's just weird. It feels very empty, as you imagine. I drove back by the cast member parking behind the Magic Kingdom and just a handful of cars in the parking lot, not nearly the amount that is usually there on a Monday. So you just get this vibe that that something's off.
So. Yeah, it's so weird because I was watching Avengers Endgame last night on Disney Plus, and I don't know if you remember, but at the beginning of the movie, it has jumped 5 years ahead and half the population is gone. So like everything is empty. And the whole time I was like, oh my gosh, this is what the world feels like right now. It made me want to turn it off and watch something happier.
Yeah, it's definitely, I don't know. It's a weird time we're living in. And I know people are probably listening to us to get away from the Corona talk. And we certainly are going to move on from that here shortly. But hopefully the magic will be back up and running shortly. Hopefully that this is just a temporary pause in the Matrix, and we'll get back to our normal broadcasting soon.
Definitely. Yeah, speaking of, I want to talk about something that's been giving me joy lately to kind of counteract all this other talk. I know I'm very behind, but I'm finally watching Encore on Disney Plus, and I hope this will at least get me through some of the quarantine. I'm sure I'll be finished long before the quarantine is over. But the reason I finally got into it is actually our friend Jeff DePauli's podcast, Disney Coast to Coast. Did you listen to this episode yet that he did recently?
No, I don't think I've listened to that one yet.
Okay, so he brought on one of the music directors from the show. He worked on like 6 or 7 of the episodes. His name is Adam Wachter. And he was just so delightful, and he was so candid and talked about how much he really, really enjoyed doing the show Encore. And it just made me want to watch. And so I started, I kind of went out of order and started with a few different episodes. But if you don't know the concept, which Jeremy, I know you do because you've seen all of them, right?
Almost all of them.
Okay.
There's a couple I still, I gotta see.
Yeah, so they take a high school cast who put on a show when they were in high school years ago, and they bring this cast back together now, and they have 5 days to get it together, and then on the 5th day, recreate the same production that they did in high school. And it has been so delightful to watch. I watched, I think my favorite so far has been the Anything Goes episode, because they bring back a cast from a 1975 high school production. So this is that's my mom's graduating class. And so they bring back this cast from that year. And it's just so funny watching them try to do the same choreography. And they're all complaining like, my body doesn't move that way anymore. And it's been a lot of fun. It was a funny crew. So that is how I'm going to be spending several of the next few days, is just binging Encore on Disney Plus.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. I still need to see like the Ragtime one, and There's another one. Oh, the Grease. But I am not a fan of Grease at all, so I'm like, not sure I'll watch that one. But did you like the Beauty and the Beast one? I thought it was so delightful.
I skipped Beauty and the Beast for now, but that's next on my list.
Gotcha.
I will say I have watched the Grease one. I think that's my least favorite of the ones so far. And it has nothing to do with Grease, the show. No offense, but I found this cast of characters, like the real people who are putting on Grease, that none of them really grabbed my attention.
Yeah. And I like how there's just enough drama in each episode to like make you interested. But like at the end of the day, you're like, this is so stupid, but it's so good.
Yeah. The Annie Get Your Gun. I cringed so many times of this cast of all their background drama from when they were in high school.
But I like how they like make them confront like who they were in high school and how they've grown. And, you know, they sort of reflect on that each episode and think about, you know, how life has taken them sometimes in paths that they didn't want to go or think they were going to go. But, you know, that's the way life is. It doesn't always turn out how we think it should. So,
yeah, I agree. So listeners, if you have nothing else to do, try a few episodes of Encore. Also check out the latest episode of Disney Coast to Coast one of the latest episodes with Adam Wachter. Jeremy, you watching anything on Disney Plus lately?
You know, I've been binging a lot of Toy Story 4 and Frozen 2.
Wait, how can you binge a movie?
I just watch it over and over again. I don't know. I just find it so good and so comforting. So that's what I've been watching on Disney Plus a lot.
Okay, fair enough.
Toy Story 4, I really think, is so underrated, and it just did not get the respect it deserves.
I mean, it won the Oscar.
Okay, but there's a lot of things that win Oscars that don't get the respect it deserves from the fans.
Or things that win Oscars that don't deserve it, like Toy Story 4.
Oh, wow. Forky is such a great character, so.
Okay. Have you seen all the episodes of Forky Ask a Question?
Love them. Yes. Okay. That was must see TV in my house every Friday when they were coming them out, you know, pumping them out by week. So, but honestly, there's really nothing that's come out recently on Disney Plus that's kind of tickled my fancy.
I agree. They've released a few original movies over the last few weeks, and none of them have really gotten that good of reviews. So I'm honestly ready for them to just drop Onward. You know, like now that all the theaters are closed, I just don't know why they can't just be like, forget it.
Yeah, might as well eat that cost too.
Yeah. Anyway, all right, well, we've got a lot to talk about. We've got a special guest to bring on. So let's dive in.
Is Jeopardy!
All right, welcome to Jeopardy, where we provide the answers and the questions all at the same time. And joining us for Jeopardy and for the remainder of the show, he is a contributor for touringplans.com, and he's also the co-author of The Unofficial Guide to Disneyland. Please welcome Guy Selga.
Hello, thank you for having me. It's good to be back. I'm very excited.
Oh, good.
We're always excited to have you as well. So, Jeopardy, again, this is where we're going to throw out the answer, and then we all provide the question. So, let's get started. The first one. The answer is red and irritated. Guy.
What is a pale family from Minnesota after visiting Disney World in July?
Mine is just kind of factual. Who is anger from Inside Out?
Mine is, what is my booty after sitting on those hard benches at Finding Nemo the Musical?
Those benches are the worst.
They really are. And the rest of the theater is so nice.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know how they made something so uncomfortable.
All right, here we go. The answer is, welcome to Flavortown.
What is the rejected tagline for the Epcot International Food and Wine Festival? 2021.
What is what the Tyrannosaurus Rex should say to you as you enter the T-Rex Cafe in Disney Springs?
Yes.
Mine is, what is never been said at the Electric Umbrella?
Certainly not now.
Yeah.
Yeah. R.I.P. It's easy to kick them when they're down.
So. That's right.
The answer is, that's hot.
What is what I say every time someone who is planning a Disney vacation shows me their down-to-the-minute spreadsheet? That's hot.
What is what all the dads say when they see Tinkerbell fly overhead at the end of a Disney fireworks show?
Yikes.
Yeah, mine's similar. What is me pointing at all the international cast members in Epcot?
So inappropriate.
The answer is served on a stick. What is me speaking to all the international cast members at Epcot?
My gosh. Y'all keep your distance. If you are an international cast member, be on the lookout. Served on a stick. What is my idea for a walk-up window next to Ohana that sells only the meat skewers in lunch-sized portions?
That's a great idea.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mine is, what is all the uneaten foods that are ground up and made into Disney corn dogs?
Yum. And then our last one, the answer is...
What is the sound you hear around Southern California when a new annual pass holder exclusive popcorn bucket is announced at Disneyland?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What is the sound of me heading for Florida if Disney ever announces that the Main Street Trolley Show is going away?
Oh.
What is the sound of all the cast members heading home when they found out Disney was closing for 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Wah, wah.
Very topical.
On today's show, we're going to be talking about a staple of the Disney parks, boat rides. So on this podcast, we did an episode on roller coasters. We've done an episode on classic style dark rides. But today we're going to talk about all of those rides that work on water. And now we typically focus on Walt Disney World on this show. But today we're going to briefly discuss the history of each of these boat rides. And you can't really do that without going all the way back to opening day at Disneyland in California. So, yeah, we're just going to work our way through all of the boat rides that have been part of the U.S. Disney parks, some of which lasted shorter than others did, and some that have been around for more than 60 years. So I'm going to kick us off, and I'm going to take us all the way back to opening day at Disneyland when the Mark Twain Steamboat opened, also called the Mark Twain Riverboat. Here in Walt Disney World, it's called the Liberty Square Riverboat or the Liberty Belle. You know it as the big steamship that floats on the rivers of America. And this actually, I love this story that it had its maiden voyage actually on July 13th, 4 days before the park opened, because Walt and Lily had a private party celebrating their 30th wedding anniversary on the Mark Twain Steamboat.
Which is so awesome. And, you know, when the park is named after you, you can kind of do that. You have that kind of pull goals, right?
Yeah, I haven't studied this too much. Are there pictures from that party?
There's a lot of pictures of their party in the Golden Horseshoe, because that's kind of where the party continued into the night. But yeah, I don't know if I've ever seen one from actual on the Mark Twain.
Yeah, it's such a cool idea, though. Take a little trip around the rivers of America on a boat. I'm sure other celebrities and Disney higher-ups were invited.
Yeah.
I love that picture of Walt. Diane Disney talks about it in one of the documentaries where I guess Walt had a couple old fashions in him, and he kind of disappeared, and they looked up, and he had climbed up the side into one of the balconies at the horseshoe there and was kind of just like up there. And there's pictures of him just smiling, looking like a little kid. It's great.
I love that. And what were the original names of the riverboats in Magic Kingdom? It was like Admiral Joe Fowler and...
That was one of them.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I didn't realize that it wasn't, the name wasn't changed to Liberty Bell until I think the 90s, maybe the 80s.
Yeah, way later. And Magic Kingdom, for those of you who don't know, used to have a copy of the Mark Twain. That was their second riverboat.
Oh, I see. Okay, so the Liberty Bell riverboat is not a copy of the Mark Twain? I just assumed it was.
No, they're different. And then they used to have also a copy, but it was destroyed in dry dock when they were like refurbishing it in the mid-80s, I think.
Fascinating. Okay, so is the boat that... I've taken a side road here. Is the boat that runs at the end of Fantasmic in Walt Disney World a recreation of the Mark Twain?
Fantasmic in Disney World, I think that's just a little recreation of the Steamboat Willie.
Steamboat,
right?
Willie, okay. Like,
yeah.
Okay, well, there you go. Anyway, so the Mark Twain Steamboat still operating today, and the Liberty Square Riverboat, which is essentially the same attraction, also running today. A few facts about it. It does run on a track in the Rivers of America. It is not necessarily free-floating. It burns biodiesel fuel to heat its boiler, which continually heats water into steam, which then turns the paddle wheel that you see on the back. It has a maximum capacity of 300 guests, and I loved reading the stories about the opening days of this attraction where they would just keep piling on people, and then it would take on water, or when everybody moved to one side to see like the Native American village, like it would take on water on that side. So it took a few days for them to realize, like, okay, 300 is a good number, don't go above that. And it's been that ever since. So.
And another fun fact about the current version of the Mark Twain at Disneyland, it's narrated by Pete Renaday, who is the voice of Henry in Country Bear Jamboree, Disney's greatest attraction ever. And you'll hear me mention that name several more times during this because he voices a lot of other Disney boat rides, it turns out.
You know what? That's funny that you say that because I reached out to him a couple of years ago when we were doing an episode. I wanted to do an episode on like voices of the Disney parks. And he was one of the ones... I think I have this right. He was one of the ones who got back to me and said, it's a busy time, but get back to me in the new year. And then I totally forgot about it and never did.
Oh. Yeah.
He's probably been sitting by his email the whole time. Wait. Yeah.
He's still living, right?
He's living. Okay. He's very old, but he's still alive. I've tweeted at Bob Iger, hey, if you want to update Country Bear Jamboree, he's still alive. But, you know, take advantage of that now because he's up there.
Okay, well, now try again with Bob Chapek.
Yeah, well, he doesn't have a Twitter, so I guess I'll have to send him a notarized letter.
At Bob Iger, could you please ask Bob Chapek to... I need to reach out to him again. But anyway, yeah, there you go, Pete Renaday. So for this episode, to keep it from being just a boring list of boat rides, I thought it'd be kind of fun to talk about what makes each ride unique, like what is something different it brings to the table? Because by the time you get to 2019, 2020, several of the boat rides just really share a lot of common features. So for this one, Jeremy or Guy, like what to you sets this ride apart other than being the oldest ride at the Disney parks?
I mean, I'll just jump in here. I think, especially here in California, you know, it's, you know, Los Angeles, near Los Angeles, Disneyland is located. You know, this big metropolis, sprawling, just urban development, and then you can go to Disneyland and ride on the Mark Twain, and it's like this escape. You're riding around this river, seeing these rock formations, going past the Native American village and New Orleans and Splash Mountain and stuff, and it's you just feel like you're on a different world. You're like in a totally different part of the country. So I think that really makes this one stand out.
I agree, and I think ever since Galaxy's Edge opened, like this ride is even more beautiful than ever with all the rock works and the waterfalls and things they added.
Yeah, it looks fantastic, and it'll look even better as the time goes on and the trees grow and all that.
Yeah, which you can't say that about every ride at Disney.
Yeah.
A few unique things for me. I think this is one of the only rides where you're kind of free to walk around even once it started moving, which is kind of unique. You can choose which view you want. And I don't think Walt Disney World does this, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think Disneyland still does it. Every once in a while, the Disneyland band plays on board. Do they still do that?
Yeah, they do that, and characters will meet on it also as it's going around the river. So, yeah.
I think that adds such an awesome element to this ride that I wish they did more often.
Yeah, it's really cool. And the band playing on the Mark Twain is like a tradition at Disneyland. Louis Armstrong used to perform on the Mark Twain during the Dixieland at Disneyland days back in the 60s. So this isn't a new thing at all.
Do you remember they did the Tiana show as well?
Showboat Jubilee. That was an amazing show. Yeah,
that
was
so good. Like that.
Yeah, again, I don't know why you can't. I mean, Tiana's still relevant. It's still New Orleans Square. You know, I don't know why you can't still do something like that.
Yeah, she just meets on the boat occasionally. In fact, I was there on March 2nd, riding the Mark Twain, and she was meeting on there.
Nice. All right, well, a classic attraction, it definitely helps sell the time period. You know, even if I don't ride it, like, I so appreciate that it's there going by. It really helps sell the theme of those lands in that area.
And the kinetic energy, too.
Absolutely, yeah. So let's talk about another attraction that was there opening day in Disneyland and is still at both parks, Walt Disney World and Disneyland. It's the Jungle Cruise. Now, in our recent episode, we did a deep dive into this ride, so we don't necessarily have to rehash all of that. But Guy, you weren't here for that conversation. So for you, what makes this attraction stand out as unique?
I think this gives cast members a really good opportunity to shine and be creative. And I know Disney management has kind of clamped down and taken away a lot of the creativity and kind of restrained them over, you know, the past, I don't know, maybe 10 years or so. But, you know, you get some really good, talented cast members and it makes it a lot of fun. But you also get some duds. But it's like, whatever. Not everyone can, you know, be, I don't know, whatever famous comedian right now. Mitch Hedberg.
Wow, you definitely picked a relevant one. Yeah. He's only been dead for 10 years.
Yeah. But that's true. Whether it's good or bad, it does guarantee that you're always going to get a different ride experience.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's super interesting that the ride opened as a serious, like, narration. That's so weird to me. I just can't even imagine that.
Yeah, we talked about that, how it was intended to basically simulate an actual journey through the jungle. Yeah. Which now that would be incredibly boring. It's like I can watch documentaries for this, you know.
Yeah. Well, you might know the answer to this, Guy. When did that transition take place?
I think it's one of those things that's not known because I had always heard that it was like bored cast members started throwing jokes into their scripts, and it just eventually evolved into what it is today.
Interesting.
So yeah, I don't know.
Well, Jungle Cruise, obviously a very classic and beloved attraction. We don't mean to just breeze over it. It's just, you know, if you want to hear more about it, check out our most recent episode and you can hear more about it there. But I want to move on to a different attraction that was their opening day kind of at Disneyland. And it was called Canal Boats of the World. It ran all the way from July 17th through September of that year. And I've heard so many stories about this, about how Walt wanted a Lilliputian land, and this was going to have miniature models of Dutch towns that you could float by. That idea was kind of scrapped in favor of this ride, Canal Boats of the World, which would allow you to pass by miniature models of world landmarks. So I'm picturing like a tiny world showcase that you ride by on a boat.
Which sounds kind of awesome, actually.
I mean, I would not hate that.
Yeah. Where was this supposed to be?
I mean, it is where Storybook Lane Canal Boats is.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And it did open on opening day, but the world landmarks weren't really there yet. It was unfinished.
Yeah, it was a lot of dirt mounds and like flowers and stuff. And I think they said they would just make up exotic plant names as they went by, like the narrators.
Let me show you my favorite plant. That one.
Yeah.
That one.
Yeah, this is one of those things, like, I don't think anything was lost by it closing. Like, Canal Boats, Storybook Land Canal Boats are way, way better than this sounds like it ever was.
Yeah. So that closed in September of 1955. And I think at that point they were like, okay, we got to do something. Flowers are not an attraction. We cannot call this a ride if it's just like mud banks. So on June 16th, 1956, Storybook Land Canal Boats opened. And this was when they added the big monstro whose mouth you enter before the rest of the ride begins. And now you see miniature models, not of world landmarks, but of Disney scenes. So like Geppetto's village in Pinocchio, or the Three Pigs houses from the Three Little Pigs. There's Alice in Wonderland, Peter Pan, all sorts of things And you have an onboard narrator who kind of guides your boats past these little villages.
Yeah, and it got updated in the 90s with Aladdin and Little Mermaid, and then they even added Frozen when that came out. So it's still current.
Yeah, when Jeremy and I first wrote it, Frozen had just opened.
Right. It's very charming. I find this traction to be just delightful. It is funny to me how it starts with the murder of Monstro, though, in such like a delightful way.
Yeah.
Because even the narrator says something to the effect of, Geppetto built the fire inside Monstro and it blew off his tail. And now we can go through it to get to the story. And I'm like, whoa.
Yep. Now, I know the boats have onboard motors. Do you know if the narrators are actually navigating the boats?
No, they're not navigating. It's a rail or a track or whatever, but they're controlling the speed.
Okay.
If you ride if you time it just right, and it's hard to do, if you ride it during fireworks, they'll stop during the fireworks and let you watch it from the boat, which is really cool.
Oh, wow.
That's interesting, because a lot of Fantasyland closes during fireworks.
Yeah.
Huh. So when we're talking about like what makes this ride unique, I think Jeremy hit it on the head when he said charming. But yeah. Also, I gotta point out that this was the first, well, I guess it's not that big of a deal, but this was the first boat ride to feature Disney films. You know, when they put it in Fantasyland, and it was going to be a ride about world landmarks, which kind of would have stood out in Fantasyland at that time. But this tried to mess with the rest of Fantasyland by adding Disney films.
That's true. And, you know, it's really a unique looking attraction, because you have the canals swooping underneath, but then above you have the Casey Jr. train going along on its track. So that whole area is very dynamic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. It's beautiful. It definitely sets Disneyland's Fantasyland apart from Walt Disney World's.
Yeah.
Have there ever been rumors? I don't want to put this out there, but it is a large space that does not eat a lot of guests at one time. And I'm just curious if there have ever been rumors of this going away.
Yeah, the rumors never seem to hit that. They always hit the Fantasyland Theater, which is like directly behind it, where they do all the stage shows and stuff. So I don't know. I have never heard a serious rumor about the boats closing.
Okay, because they don't even run all day long, do they?
They stop an hour before and an hour. They stop an hour before parades and then reopen an hour after parade.
Oh, okay. So not a big window there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. Storybook Land Canal Boats. Been around for more than 60 years. Classic attraction. All right. So now we're going to move on to our first casualty of the rides we're going to talk about today. On July 30th, 1955, of course, we know Tomorrowland wasn't really finished when Disneyland opened, but here at the end of the month, we get the Tomorrowland boats. And I feel like I hear about these always pop up in searches of extinct Disney attractions, because it's one of the shortest lived attractions of all time. So this was in Tomorrowland. I believe this was where the lagoon is now for Finding Nemo submarines.
Yeah.
And it was only one of the only attractions in Tomorrowland at that time. And basically you got on a very small boat that only fit two, maybe three guests. And you actually steered the boat yourself, free-floating around this lagoon. There was no track. And it quickly ran into problems because the engines would overheat. I guess like guests were trying to go as fast as they could. I would if I were on it. Yeah. And guests kept aiming for high speeds. The engine would overheat. And this is my favorite part. The boats had to be like pulled back to the dock, like using ropes and all sorts of things. And also, I think they emitted a lot of smoke, and it was just a huge mess. So on January 15th, 1956, they temporarily closed, and then when they reopened, now a cast member was on board every boat to make sure they didn't try to go too fast.
Which, the cost of that, oh
I
my
mean,
God.
Yeah, because if you think, let's say you have 15 boats, that's 15 cast members who have to be ready to go at all times.
Yeah. And these were the boats designed by Bob Gurr? This one of his things?
I don't know who designed them, but they've got like the wing flaps in the back, and you can see where they were trying to go futuristic with them.
Yeah, they're very cool.
I love these so much. They look like something the villain would drive on the Batman TV show from back in the day.
Yeah, gosh. The 60s Batman, yeah.
You're totally right. But you can imagine that once they add a cast member and you're not even steering the boat yourself and you can only fit one, maybe two people on there in a tight space with the cast member, like, you can kind of see why this wasn't the most thrilling attraction.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I guess if we're talking about what makes it unique, I mean, you could drive your own boat for a while. I guess that was the selling point of this ride when it opened.
Sure. Yeah.
That, and they look cool. I mean, they really do look cool. I like them.
Yeah.
I agree.
And unique for 1955. I bet there weren't many places where you could go and drive your own boat.
It's very true. In fact, I could see this maybe working in 1971 when Walt Disney World opened as one of the rides like on the Seven Seas Lagoon or Bay Lake or something. Maybe not an in-park attraction, but...
Yeah, which is really what they... I mean, you still can rent a boat out there.
Yeah, yeah. So these were the Tomorrowland boats. I didn't say this, but when they reopened and the cast members were part of them, they were called the Phantom Boats or the Tomorrowland Phantom Boats. And then they closed in August 1956, which I think means this was the first ride in all of Disneyland to close its doors.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a legacy. Huh.
That's right. We salute you.
We'll never forget.
All right, moving on now to the Mike Fink Keelboats, another ride that is no longer with us, but it lasted much longer. So just a few facts. This opened Christmas Day, 1955, and ran until... I'll get to that. And it was part of opening day at Walt Disney World. It ran from 1971 to 2001 there. Now, these boats fascinate me because I look at them and I wonder, what did these have to offer that the riverboat didn't?
There's more low to the ground and, I don't know, just another thing on the river. The keelboats are like beloved, I think, especially with like Disneyland people, even though they tipped over quite a few times. I remember, like, I think you could just go on Google and type in like Disneyland keelboat tip over and see a bunch of stories from back in the day. But the part of the spiel when you got on was like, don't rock the boat or we'll all be keeled. Hearing that as a kid.
I mean, looking at them, they look very top heavy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because all the guests are like on top of the roof.
Yeah. And everybody wanted to sit on top.
Yeah. Nobody wants to be in the lower part. That's boring.
Yeah. It was almost like a stagecoach, but a boat.
Yes, yeah. That's exactly what it is. And the selling point at the beginning, I think this is kind of cool, that they used two boats. And at first, they later changed it. But at first, the boats were the actual props that they were based on that were used in the filming of Davy Crockett.
Wow.
Yeah, which is like so, like, that just seems like something Walt would just do. Because like, yeah, we got these boats. Yeah, throw them in Disneyland and use them and put people on them and stuff. And now it's like they put them in a museum and preserve them and stuff.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes, that's a great point. So apparently this was based on an episode where there was a keelboat race. Mike Fink is the name of the character who lost to Davy Crockett. So you're on the losing boats when you ride this attraction. But it's basically a two-story boat. You can sit inside on the first floor or outside, basically on the roof of the boats. Later, the two props were replaced with different boats that were a little bit bigger, could seat more people. These operated seasonally. Like you said, Guy, on May 17th, 1997, one of the boats tipped over. I read that several guests were treated for injuries at a nearby hospital. So understandably, that was the final day of operations at Disneyland. But what fascinates me is that at Walt Disney World, they still ran for four more years.
Yeah, they had a good run at Disney World. And by the way, the dock for the keelboats are still there in Disneyland and Magic Kingdom. Like, you can see them and go on them. And I don't know if you can go on it in Disney World, but the keelboat dock at Disneyland is right across from the Haunted Mansion entrance. And it was used as a smoking section for years. And now it's just a seating area. And then the one in Magic Kingdom is just basically to the immediate left of the Haunted Mansion entrance, and there's stairs going down. I think they use it during the Halloween parties for meet and greets and whatever.
Yeah, I don't think you can go down there regularly.
Yeah.
There you go. Mike Fink Keelboats. We just missed these, Jeremy and I, because we didn't go to the parks till later in the 2000s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it is funny to me that these feel like an ancient attraction, but they didn't close till 2001 on the East Coast.
Yeah.
I would love to be on there when it tipped. That would be a great story.
I don't want to be one of the ones treated for injuries, but...
Well, because that water is only like 5 feet deep or something, so I guess it makes sense that falling off of that thing would hurt.
Were these on the track, or were these free-floating?
These were free-floating.
That's cool, then. That makes them unique, I guess. Yeah. Are the rafts free-floating?
Yeah, yeah.
They go to Tom Sawyer Island? Okay. So really, the riverboat's the only track used.
Yeah, at Disneyland, just Mark Twain and the Columbia are on the track.
Okay. Well, I'm going to move on to another attraction that is on the Rivers of America. These didn't open until July 4th, the 4th of July, 1956. Originally, they were called the Indian War Canoes.
Yee!
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they actually weren't renamed the Davy Crockett Explorer Canoes until 1971. But on May 19th, 1971, they became known as Davy Crockett's Explorer Canoes. These also were part of Walt Disney World opening day. The difference is they are still at Disneyland, albeit seasonally, but they are no longer at Walt Disney World. In fact, they closed in 1994.
That is so crazy to me that they've been gone that long at Disney World, but they're still popular and running at Disneyland.
It makes you wonder what the difference is.
Yeah.
Probably weather.
I went to Disney World once in 1996, and then I didn't go again until 2008. And then I've been going regularly since then. And I've always thought that the Rivers of America in Magic Kingdom were kind of like dead. Mm-hmm. There's not much going on there. Because the boat doesn't even run all day either. So I feel like that river could use these.
I'll give you that, yeah.
Maybe vacationers don't want to row the boats, though.
I was going to say, people would not appreciate these at Walt Disney World.
Yeah.
I will say, okay, so the thing that makes me laugh about this is that it is guest-powered. It might be the only attraction in the park that is guest-powered. It requires exercise, and I'm thinking about sitting in a boat when it's 95 degrees, 90% humidity in Orlando. I'm not going to want to row a boat.
That's true.
Yeah.
I've seen the way guests do smugglers run. There's no way they could control me.
That's so true. Yeah. And what makes me laugh also is back when they were Indian War Canoes, the cast members who sat at the front of the canoe and the back of the canoe to help row were dressed as Native Americans.
Yeah, this is some cultural appropriation that's not going to fly. You know, it's interesting that we say that too, because the rafts that still run at Walt Disney World, one of them is still named Injun Joe.
It's true.
And I am shocked every time I see it that that's still a thing.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was a character, but there were other characters to choose from, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've talked about the steamboat. We've talked about the canoes, the Mike Fink kill boats. There was a lot happening on the Rivers of America when all of these ran at the same time.
Yeah. Crazy. Traffic jams and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure you had to be very careful about that. I did read also that the guides were always men. Up until 1995.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, they dropped some of the rules about certain roles being gender specific, and this was one of them. So until 1995, you would never have a female guide on your canoe.
It's like Tiki Room at some point was women only as the hosts there.
Yeah, yeah. Fantasyland for a long time was only women on all the attractions.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So
a world with women in charge, truly a fantasy, am I right?
Oh my gosh, get out of here. So we've talked about it being guest powered. It's not on the track. Anything else that makes this attraction unique and maybe worth riding if you're looking for something different?
I mean, I'll just say it's unique because I think they still do it in Disney World. They definitely do it in Disneyland. They have the cast member canoe races around the Rivers of America every year. And that's like a big deal for cast members.
That's awesome.
Yeah. They do it like before the park opens and they have like a tournament and stuff.
That's kind of cool. It reminds me of something from like one of those old 90s movies about summer camp.
Yeah.
Like Poison Ivy with Michael J. Fox or Heavyweights or something.
Yeah.
I have to imagine, Jeremy and I have, I think we talked about writing it when we were there, but you see him working so hard, and I think we were like, nah. But I have
I don't think it's that hard. I do these a couple times a year, but yeah, I don't think it's that hard.
Okay, I just feel like it has to depend on the ages of the guests on your boat. Yeah. You see him floating by, and you see like the 10-year-old who's got his paddle just like resting in the water, which is obviously creating friction.
Yeah.
Well, my thing is, I'm a sweater, so once I start sweating, I don't stop. So why would I put myself in a position to work up a sweat? Just doesn't sound appealing to me.
Well, you still can do it at Disneyland if you would like. Just don't look for it at Walt Disney World anymore.
I only do it if I can wear my Native American headdress.
Please do not do that. Or at least don't do it when you're with me. Thank you.
I'm sure Disneyland used to sell those. Like, it just seems like something they would sell back in the 50s.
Totally. Yeah. Okay, so next. This is one I have to admit I know very little about. I mean, I did some research on it for this episode. But I don't even know if I was aware this was a thing. The Motor Boat Cruise opened in 1957 and actually did not close until 1991. Like, it lasted well past the opening of the submarine voyage and all sorts of things.
I remember these fondly because I was a child, a young child. These closed when I was 10 years old. So this was one of the few things that a kid could actually ride and feel like they were doing something, even though you weren't really. You were on a track, and all you had to do was hold down the gas pedal. There was a steering wheel in each boat, and you could turn it, but it wouldn't actually like turn the boat. This is one of the few pictures I have as a kid from Disneyland, like a little, I don't know, 4-year-old me in one of the motorboats. I should send that to you guys so you can put it in your show notes or something. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No. That's great information. So the steering wheel didn't even... So this is on a track. So I was picturing like Tomorrowland Speedway or Autopia. The steering wheel didn't even move you slightly to the left and right long as the track.
No, not at all. It was an ornament only.
One of the websites I read said kind of satirically, the gas pedal didn't do anything, although it did seem to make the boat louder if you pressed it harder. So,
you know, I heard that too, and that's not how I remember it, but I think I remember one of the old time Imagineers saying that too. So maybe I'm misremembering, but there was definitely a gas pedal either way that you pressed and something happened.
Okay. So a few facts about it. It traveled along a waterway that sort of connected Fantasyland and Tomorrowland. So behind where the lagoon is now, it sounds like. And the bench seat, I mean, it's a motorboat. When you picture a motorboat, this is what the ride was. And it had a bench seat that fit two guests on it. And essentially, you didn't control yourself, but it gave the illusion that you steered yourself. And you got to see rocks and flowers and trees, and you got to see Tomorrowland all around.
Yeah, there was nothing along those waterways except for what you said. You would go by the Fantasyland Autopia because there was two Autopias back then. And then I think the water connected to the submarine lagoon also, if I remember right. Or no, it didn't connect to the submarine lagoon.
Did it not?
I don't know.
It's so close to it.
Yeah. But either way, the loading dock is still there. It's a seating area. It's right behind Idlewise Snacks, which is kind of in that Matterhorn Plaza area. So you can still go out there and enjoy a turkey leg.
And I don't want to mow your lawn, but I'm seeing that these were given a gummy bears overlay at some point.
Yeah, which... so like I said, they closed in 1991, but that was only so they could be given an overlay that lasted until January of 1993, and it was renamed Motorboat Cruise to Gummy Glen, and essentially all they added were plywood characters of gummy bears.
Yeah, that was for the Disney Afternoon Live event, and that was when they also did a similar thing to the Fantasyland Autopia, and they made it Chippendale Rescue Ranger Raceway, and they same thing, they added like Chippendale plywood flats everywhere, and they added a cheap version of Toontown in the Small World Mall area, and they just added like cardboard flats to make it look like Duckburg and other Disney Afternoon locales. The ride didn't change much other than that, though.
They should have brought those back for 90s night when they had that last year.
Oh,
they should have, yeah.
Photo ops with the plywood characters.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this, speaking of Toontown, this did close around the same time Toontown opened. I don't think they necessarily share the same space, but I think just for budget. No. Yeah, for budget reasons, they ended up closing it. So, anyway, what made this attraction unique, and why did it last 30 years?
Oh, what did make it unique?
I know. I had written down, it gave Tomorrowland another attraction.
Yeah.
And it was essentially Autopia, but on water. But it sounds like not even as good as Autopia.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
Yeah. Motorboat Cruise. Disney World never had this. So.
Right.
And Disney Afternoon. Let's not forget that.
Yeah. True. True. This might be the only Gummy Bears attraction ever.
That's true.
Mm. Wow. Legacy.
Yet. I would like to throw in yet.
Yeah. Yes. So far. Yeah.
Hey, you never know. With Disney Plus, they're rebooting everything. I wouldn't be surprised if they did Gummy Bears in a couple of years.
It was so good. I understand things are always a little rose-colored through child's eyes, but nothing was better than Disney Afternoon back in the day.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
All right, still in the 50s. I'm moving on now to Sailing Ship Columbia. This opened June 14th. Hey, Flag Day. 1958. This was a replica of the first American sailing ship to go around the world. I thought that was kind of interesting. Essentially, it just kind of serves the same purpose and even shares the same dock, I think, as the Mark Twain riverboat. So it just gave the Rivers of America one more large walk-around boat to run around those waters.
Yeah, Mark Twain is great. Mark Twain. The Columbia is great. You can walk around the top deck and see all the different scenes of the Rivers of America. And you can also go beneath and see the galley and the crew quarters and all that kind of stuff. And at one point they fire a cannon, like an actual cannon. So that's cool. And then also, again, for a number of years, this was narrated by Pete Renaday from Country Bear Jamboree, Henry. The narration changed, so he's not doing it anymore, but he still does the safety spiel.
Oh, that's cool. And this is what's used during Fantasmic, during the what is now the Black Pearl Pirates of the Caribbean scene.
Yeah, and before it was the Peter Pan part.
Yeah. I want to say, I've never been on this, I want to say at least one of the trips Jeremy and I took this decade, it was under refurbishment the whole time. It might have been both trips.
Yeah, I think so.
It doesn't run as much as the Mark Twain does, that's for sure. So yeah, this is you can easily miss this one.
Do they ever run at the same time? Like while one is on the other half of the river, one is loading?
Yeah, for like from like spring break until like Halloween time, they'll run both, like during all the busy times.
I love this boat. I think it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's cool.
Wouldn't mind if Walt Disney World had gotten it, but probably we're way past that point now.
Yeah. And it makes it like it adds so much to Fantasmic. It's so huge and there's so much activity on it during the show.
Oh, we know. Because we got Pocahontas.
Yeah.
So we know what a difference this boat can make. Anyway, so that takes us through like early Disneyland, basically. A lot of those are gone now. Some of them still remain. But those were those very early years. And so I'm going to send it over to you, Guy, and maybe we can work our way through sort of modern Disneyland.
Okay, I'm going to start off with the Submarine Voyage, which opened on June 14th, 1959. And this lasted until the September 9th, 1998. Walt bragged that he had the eighth largest fleet of submarines in the world when it opened.
Oh, my gosh.
And I feel like somebody told him that in passing, and then he just, like, that was just something that was so cool. And I could see him, like, going around on, like, the media day telling, like, every single newspaper reporter in, like, 1959 that was the case.
It's a talking point.
Yeah. You know, this ride is still here as the Finding Nemo Submarine Voyage, which we'll get into later, but the underwater effect is really impressive, like surprisingly impressive. And it's such a simple effect because you're only really, you know, a couple feet below water. And if you you're looking at the porthole just normally, you wouldn't even know that the water line is only a couple feet ahead of you. Like if you have to stick your head all the way in and like tilt your head up to even see the top of the water. But the effect works really well. It looks fantastic at night too when you're in the lagoon because they light it. They have some good mood lighting in there. The subs were originally gray, very, very Cold War looking, just gray cold steel. And in the mid 80s, I think underwater exploration kind of got more imaginative and adventurous back then. I don't know if you guys remember that. Like that was like the Jacques Cousteau era. So they repainted the subs kind of yellow oranges and orange and gave them like a more fun color. Yeah, it was weird. The sub lagoon sat empty at when it closed in September of 1998. It sat empty until 2007, which just blows my mind. The ride was closed during the era of Paul Pressler when he was really penny pinching and the park suffered and you know they had a huge drop in attendance because of it and maintenance was way down everywhere and they just shut the ride with no replacement. So that was depressing.
I've never really thought about that, but yeah, I guess up until the point when they announced, hey, it's going to be Finding Nemo, people had to have been wondering, like, is this ever going to be anything again?
Yeah, it's just so weird, that huge real estate sitting for almost 10 years, you know, unused.
Now, answer me this, I don't even know if you wrote it, but what did you look at when you rode Submarine Voyage?
So it was pretty much the same as Finding Nemo. I mean, you would go through and you'd see like underwater life, animatronic fish and kelp and seaweed and stuff like that. And, you know, the ride was you'd go through different parts of the world. So like the start would be like, oh, there's a storm coming, so we have to go underwater. And then you're in the North Pole and then you're in, I don't remember the other places, but. And then at the end of the ride, you would see a sea serpent, and it was a really cartoonish, like cartoony, like, you know, as fondly as this version of the ride is remembered, it really didn't age very well.
Yeah.
But it could have used a big upgrade. I wanted to point out too, the subs were originally diesel, very loud, very smelly. But when they reopened for the Finding Nemo version, they're electric subs now. And the electricity is actually in the track, and it's transferred somehow through the water to the subs to make them run, which is crazy, like technology.
Yeah, huh. Diesel. Oh my word!
I gotta say, even though the water line is right there, we rode these once, or I've rode these once, and it made me very claustrophobic.
Oh yeah, you're inside those subs, and there's maybe, I don't know, not even 5 feet across the thing. And then they're maybe like 5.5 feet tall. Like I'm not even 6 feet and I have to duck down when I walk out of those things.
Yeah.
And they pack them. I mean, you're putting quite a few guests in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And your face is very close to the windows as well.
Yeah, definitely. So don't ride this if you're claustrophobic or just close your eyes. I don't know.
Yeah. It's not worth the long wait if you're just going to close your eyes the whole time.
What makes it unique? Like, it just goes without saying, you're on a submarine. Like,
yeah,
that's unreal.
Yeah, I agree. This is, it's not my favorite. Like, it is so slow loading.
Yeah, it's,
you know, everybody has to find their seat, and it's basically a single row. So you have to wait for everyone in front of you to find their seat before you get yours. It takes forever to launch. So it's not my favorite attraction, but it definitely has a ton of things that other attractions don't have, just the way it's loaded and the fact that you're going underwater. I think this is still the only underwater boat ride.
Yeah, you know, the current Finding Nemo version is whatever. It's fine. You know, you find Nemo. Nemo gets lost again.
Yep.
Are you surprised?
That's the story.
And this one has a lot of, it uses a lot of projection technology. So you're going by and you'll see like actual physical rock work and a sunken ship and whatever. But then kind of in one of the holes of the ship, there'll be like a screen with Dory and what's his name? Frank. I don't know. What's the dad's name? Finding Nemo?
Marlin.
Marlin.
And Frank. Like,
where's Nemo? Where is he? Hot tub. Yeah.
Now, I want to say 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea was never in Disneyland, right?
Right, 20,000 Leagues. Oh, I didn't even mention that. This had a Disney World counterpart. 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea opened October 14th, 1971. Closed September 5th, 1994. Then it sat empty as a lagoon. Wow, they have a lot in common. They sat empty for a number of years.
You're right. And now it's what, like Winnie the Pooh, Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, that area?
Yeah, Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, Little Mermaid, yeah, all that area. This took up a huge footprint in the Magic Kingdom. I never went when the ride was open, but I visited and saw the lagoon and just remember thinking like, wow, this is a big lagoon. Did you guys ever ride this?
No, we never rode it. And I guess in my mind, I always thought this was an exact replica of Disneyland. I didn't realize that Disneyland never had 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. And while Disney World only ever had 20,000 Leagues, like it wasn't Submarine Voyage first.
Right.
It was immediately 20,000 Leagues.
Yeah, the Disney World version had the Nautilus subs, which I think that's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
That must have been so cool to see all the Nautilus subs rolling around. And this is going to be my last Pete Renaday mention. He narrated 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, the entire thing.
Wow. What a legend.
Yeah. He really put in work for Disney. He must have gotten some good paychecks.
Yeah, when we first visited, I think this was already a playground area.
Right, because they did the Pooh's Playful Spot, I think it was called.
In there. Yeah, and now there's actually a Nautilus in the tree there at Winnie the Pooh that you can see.
Yeah, they moved the tree from where the lagoon was. They moved it over to the front of the Pooh ride. And then they built the mine train on the land where the subs were.
Yeah. And when you say there's a Nautilus, he does not mean like there's an entire Nautilus submarine just sitting there. He means there's a little carving that looks like the yeah. Nautilus inside the tree.
Yeah, a little nod.
People are going to walk by and be like, I don't see the Nautilus anywhere.
Yeah. Moving on, the next up is It's a Small World, all-time classic. It opened at the 1964 World's Fair in New York and then moved to Disneyland on May 28th, 1966. And, of course, opening day attraction in Walt Disney World on October 1st, 1971. You know, what is there to say about It's a Small World that hasn't been said? It's timeless, beautiful, imaginative. It has a excellent message that the world, especially now, needs. Mm. But the big thing is the never-ending debate. It will rage until the end of time. Disneyland's original flume boat ride, Small World, or Disney World's flooded sets. I don't know. There's pluses and minuses to both. So what do you guys think? The flume or the flooded sets?
Well, do you know any particular reason why they chose one or the over the other?
I don't know, actually.
I mean, it kind of makes sense to me to have a flume at like the World's Fair because, you know, you can control the water a little bit more. I'm sure water was not as plentiful at that time. But why they went with the pooling at Walt Disney World, I've always wondered that. Personally, maybe it's just because I started at Walt Disney World. I like the flooded set sort of feel. Because yeah. It makes it feel bigger to me.
Yeah, definitely. I think the Disneyland's version, the scale of the overall ride is bigger. And I do kind of like the feeling of the flume because the physical sets on the sides go down below it also. So it makes it almost like you're kind of in the air, which I think is a neat effect.
I've never thought about that, but you're right. Yeah, because you can use either side of the flume if there's no water there.
Yeah, but then the Disney World version with the flooded sets, I think, looks so cool and dynamic with all the flowing water all around you and stuff. And the sets are kind of, they feel more further out. Like Disneyland's, it's just all so grand in scale. It's all almost like on top of you. But then Disney World, it's the focal point is out further.
Yeah, well, and what Disneyland has going for it, obviously the gorgeous facade out front. But the fact that it goes outside and inside, I think, is a really cool part of that attraction.
Yeah, definitely.
And also, if you've seen Tomorrowland the movie, you know there's added benefits to the Disneyland. For those seven people that saw that movie.
Yeah, I saw that movie, and I remember watching the first 5 minutes in the World's Fair, and thinking, this is awesome. Wow, what a great, this is going to be so fun. And then it was like, this movie's not good. this is really slow. When are they going to get to the story? And yeah.
Yeah. It occurred to me, and I hadn't really thought about it before now, that this is a dark ride, essentially. You know, it's not the traditional dark ride you think of. So really, this was the first dark ride to use boats.
Yeah.
Because you and I guess the first dark ride to not feature Disney movies.
Right. And it eventually did get Disney movies in the Disneyland version and really every other version in the world, except for Disney Worlds, which it's so weird that Disney World never got the.
You would think we would be the first.
I was just about to say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would love to see a really good like book or documentary or whatever about the creation of It's a Small World, because the fact that they were able to pull this off in 9 months, there has to be some really good stories and intense meetings and just everybody just balls to the wall kind of a thing.
Yeah.
When this was placed in Fantasyland at Disneyland, was this the first ride there to not be based on a Disney movie? I mean, Canal Boats of the World, briefly.
I was gonna say, when you're going by the mini Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, which never was actually there. It was just an idea.
I mean, I guess, you know, the Jungle Cruise, like people say it's based on the True Life Adventure movies or whatever, but.
I mean, in Fantasyland.
Oh, in Fantasyland. Oh, yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah. Because even now, all the other attractions there, unless you count the half of Matterhorn.
Yeah.
Anyway,
and the Disney characters, you know, it was very divisive at the beginning, but I think most people are fine with it now, and they're pretty tastefully done. And you know, you go by England and you see Alice in Wonderland, and you know, when you're in Mexico, you see the Three Caballeros and stuff like that. I think the only part that was, you know, in my opinion, not well done is the American room with like the
Woody
the
and
Toy Story characters, yeah. And just that whole room, just I don't know, it seems very lackluster.
Yeah, I was very underwhelmed by the Disney characters, but I can see where after many rides I would just kind of learn to embrace it, or at least accept it.
Yeah. So Small World, iconic, and you know, it introduced Disney to the idea of a flumed boat ride, which led them to the idea of making Pirates of the Caribbean a boat ride. And, you know, this is another thing. What can you say about Pirates of the Caribbean that hasn't been said? So I'll just read a quote from Marty Sklar. From a story standpoint, from a design standpoint, everything we do is kind of measured against Pirates of the Caribbean. And I think that's so true. Even now to this day, even with Rise of the Resistance, you know, Flight of Passage, any new Disney ride, I think people are still comparing it to Pirates of the Caribbean, which is incredible considering this ride opened in March of 1967 in Disneyland and December of 1973 in Disney World.
That was what was so fascinating to me about doing this list of rides, because when you compare this attraction to all the rides we've talked about before, like you can see how absolutely game-changing it was, because yeah. the boat itself is very similar to It's a Small World, and I can see where the Imagineers were like, oh, this, we can do a boat ride dark ride now. We can use a flume for a dark ride, and it just opened up this huge world of possibilities where now you have these crazy good audio animatronics that use the same technology as Abraham Lincoln. I think this is probably the first ride that created like an outdoor setting indoors, you know,
when
oh my gosh, it's just gorgeous where you feel like you're outside because of the nighttime sky above you, but you're not. This one has two drops in Disneyland. It's just, you just like it, between Small World and this, the Imagineers, their creativity just like blew wide open.
Yeah, and it's well known that this was originally going to be a Pirates Wax Museum walkthrough, and that they were working on, and then they the Imagineers were all taken off the project to work on World's Fair stuff, and then they did Small World, and then they came back and said, hey, let's make it a flume, like you said. So, yeah, you know, this ride is just incredible. Countless details. You can ride 100 times and still spot something new. They're always tweaking it and updating it. Even as recently as last year, you know, Disneyland removed the Davy Jones waterfall effect and restored the original narration kind of through there, and then put a new effect with or a new little gag with an octopus that was from an original Mark Davis sketch. So
yeah,
it's just it's always being tweaked and updated.
Yeah,
don't forget that photo op at Walt Disney World.
Yeah, that's so good.
Make that your Christmas card.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
During the part where you go by the shipwreck and the lightning and all that, and it takes your photo now.
Oh my gosh! Don't even get me started on that.
But nobody realizes it's happening, so everyone is kind of making dumb faces.
Exactly.
Plus, you're in a boat with like 20 other strangers. Like who wants that picture?
Yes, because you're all in the picture. I know, it's so dumb. And it's so obvious, too. Everybody's like, oh, did it just take our picture? Yeah, because of the blinding flash that makes no sense in the context of the story. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. But I love doing these in order because it really just did click for me. It's easy to forget after going to the Disney parks for so long that Pirates of the Caribbean was as game-changing as it was. Like, it's still obviously very iconic and still very great. But reading them in order now and seeing it in the context of all the other boat rides, you're like, holy cow, this was incredible.
Yeah. All right. I guess I'll move on to the next Disney boat ride, which unforgettable.
No, right? Also game changing and incredible.
Also the standard yeah, that we compare everything to.
These are the Swan Boats, which opened in the Magic Kingdom on May 20, 1973. Although that is debatable. I'll bring that up in a minute.
Okay.
And ran until August 1983. So I wanted to point the listeners to a blog post by Foxy over at Passport to Dreams Old and New blog. It's kind of the definitive Swan Boats article, which, yes, there is a definitive Swan Boats article.
All of the Swan Boat articles.
Yeah. It's called Snapshot, the Plaza Ice Cream Boat Shuffle. Snapshot, the Plaza Ice Cream Boat Shuffle. That's the name of the blog post. This was a not even a transportation ride, because it didn't take you from one point to the other. It just took you in a circle back to the beginning. It was a boat ride around the plaza, the hub of Magic Kingdom. If you're a newer Disney World fan, you may not know that, you know, unlike now, how the hub in Magic Kingdom is just like a flat, barren wasteland with a couple fountains. There used to be a moat going all the way around, and it was very beautiful, a waterway. And in the 70s and early 80s, there was a boat ride where you rode in these white swans that would go around the plaza. The loading dock was originally going to be where the plaza restaurant is now. And they actually did build it, but the ice cream shop ended up being so popular that they used the loading dock that they built for the swan boats as seating for the ice cream shop.
Which is still there.
Yeah, which is still there. And then they built the loading dock they ended up using to kind of the left of the Tomorrowland entrance. And this lasted for decades, I think up until, I don't know, 2010 or something, that you could go out and sit on it and they would just have tables and chairs and stuff. And the most interesting thing to me about this ride, so I mentioned that it was originally meant to be an opening day attraction, and it got delayed and opened in 1972. And there's evidence that it did open in 72, because there's pictures and guide maps and stuff. But it was going to have some sort of computer guidance system. And there's pictures underwater of these little white pucks around the hub that would like guide the boats around. And this did not work at all. And so it was quickly removed and reopened in 1973. And that's the official Disney opening date, is the May 20, 1973 date. With traditional boat motors and whatever. I was born in March 1983, so I did not get a chance to experience this.
yeah, makes sense. I you know, I can't speak from experience. I have a feeling we didn't miss much.
Yeah. I wouldn't have a problem if this was still around. It would be a nice little thing, nice little sightseeing thing. Is it the end of the world that it's not there anymore? No. I don't know. Do you guys have anything to say about this?
I mean, we talked about kinetic energy. In my mind, that's really the only thing this would add. I think it probably suffered from the same problem as a ride we're going to talk about later in the Animal Kingdom, where you ride it around and you're like, oh, so that was it. Like, it wasn't even, like, you didn't really see anything. That wasn't even really transportation. We got dropped off where we left.
Yeah.
I think it's important to note that the boats did look like swans, or at least had swans on the front.
Yes, and wings on the back, kind of.
Yeah, so, you know, they're very, like, what I like to call tacky elegant.
kind of like Cheesecake Factory.
yes.
Hey. Yeah, I can kind of see that they would vibe well with, like, the Main Street, the Grand Floridian look.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, R.I.P. Swan Boats.
moving on into the 80s and the glorious Epcot Center, we have Listen to the Land, which opened with the park on October 1st, 1982. It was later renamed to Living with the Land in December 1993, which it still is today, obviously. Unique that it really doesn't have a story. It takes you through a greenhouse and then another greenhouse and then a different kind of greenhouse. And then you see some fish in some fish farming in an aqua cell. And you go past a laboratory where no one is ever working in. And, you know, I'm partially kidding because I actually do like this ride just because I think it's really interesting and fascinating to see.
True. I've seen people working in there. In fact, we did the behind the scenes tour.
Yeah.
And there were people in there doing something. I don't know if it's work, but it
was something. Yeah. And by the way, the behind the scenes tour, fascinating. one of the great Disney World values, too, I think.
Yeah.
For sure. We loved it.
Yeah.
You sounded like a 10-year-old describing the attraction. You're like, there's a greenhouse and another one. And then you see some fish. I mean, it's educational. Come on, this is one of the first educational attractions.
Yeah, I am of course just joking. This is a great ride. And you see some really fascinating stuff in there, like crops that are grown upside down, and some crops that are on conveyor belts that are moving around, and then they go through and get watered every once in a while. And what is the Mickey vegetable? Is it like a squash? A giant squash? They always have like a Mickey-shaped giant vegetable.
Yeah, it's like a gourd of some type.
Okay, yeah. The original version had, I guess you could call it a classic Epcot song. The Listen to the Land.
Listen to the Land.
With the children's choir. We talked about that on the episode where we went over all the music.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the original ride opened with something called Symphony of the Seed, which was a stylized look at the growing of a seed. And now it's just a kind of a storm where you're going through a rainforest. And then you go past a desert scene and then a little house on a prairie with like prairie dogs and stuff. And I think every Disney fan wants to live in that house.
Yeah, it's a little yellow. Yeah, the little yellow farmhouse.
So that is very cool about this ride, is that you get a little dark ride section before going into the greenhouses and all that.
Yeah, I mean, it's essentially a dark ride turned walking tour, except you're not walking, you're on a boat, but you're touring actual backstage areas, essentially, of Disney.
Yeah, and they tell you when you're on the ride that they use the lettuce and stuff in various restaurants around Disney World. I would love to know the percentage, though.
Right.
Is it like 1% of all Disney World's cabbage or whatever?
Only Garden Grill uses it. None of the other
restaurants. I actually do think that's only the Land Pavilion. And then I also learned that a lot of that goes to feed the animals at Animal Kingdom as well.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
That's good.
Super interesting. But yeah, a great ride. Do you guys have anything else to say about Listen to the Land or Living with the Land?
I think you pretty much summed it up.
Okay.
Well, I will say the thing that I think separates these boats from other boats of similar genre is these have the nice canopy tops as well.
Yes, they do. And the ride opened with live onboard narrators, cast members.
I forgot that.
Yeah. Which you ride it now and you're like, did this really need a live person narrating?
Well, if we're talking about old shows, you can not only listen to our episode with Guy, where we talked about the music on this, you can listen to our episode with the man whose voice you hear now on Living with the Land.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. I wish I knew his name. I'm so sorry.
Michael something, right? Michael?
Oh, I'll find it later.
He's got a great voice, though. Very comforting.
Oh, man. He was awesome. Like, one of my favorite guests we've ever had, because he also narrates The People Mover. The same voice does both rides. And he was an awesome guest. It's just been so long now, I can't remember his name.
Truly one of those people that loves their job and is, like, shocked that they get to do it.
Yeah.
And just, like, so appreciative. He the whole time, he's just like, man, I don't even know. It was just a blessing. Like,
that's awesome. All right, moving on to another Epcot Center classic, opened with the park on October 1st, 1982, El Rio de Tiempo. It closed on January 2nd, 2007 to become the Grand Fiesta Tour, starring the Three Caballeros. This was like a very early Epcot Center travelogue kind of thing. You would go past and see, you know, the screens of people in Mexico swimming and cliff diving and sitting in a bar. The most iconic thing, I think, by far was the fiber optic fireworks at the end.
Yeah. You're so right.
Which are still in the attraction. And then there was a the ride started out and almost like Pirates of the Caribbean. You're going past the restaurant right there, past a temple, and it's a night sky. The sun is setting off in the distance, very moody and pretty and nice. And then you go through kind of some ancient ruins, and then you go through a kind of a Mexican version of It's a Small World, which is really cool. And it would play that like super catchy theme song. I'm not going to hump it at all, but yeah,
so
that
was good.
One of the better songs. I think we called that, didn't we call that like Taco Bell, the song on the,
you're right. It's so good. Da, 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 da.
Yeah, that's good stuff. And then, it got rethemed into the Grand Fiesta Tour starring Three Caballeros, like I said. Opened in 2007 without the animatronics that are currently there. And I'd always heard that was part of the plan. I'm not sure what took them 10 years to add the animatronics.
I still remember the day when on Twitter people were like, so guys, we just rode Grand Fiesta Tour and the Three Caballeros animatronics are just like randomly in there now.
Yeah, I just happened to be in the park that day, which is so weird. I live in California, and I just happened to be in Epcot when that happened. Eventually it did add the Three Caballeros animatronics from the Mickey Mouse Revue, which opened in Magic Kingdom and then moved to Tokyo Disneyland in 1983. And they redressed them and put fur on them and stuff, and they actually look fantastic.
Yeah.
Really beautifully animated.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, was this the first time Disney characters were featured in a World Showcase attraction? Wasn't that the big hubbub when Grand Fiesta Tour opened?
Yeah, I guess that was it, because this was years before Frozen, and I don't know, maybe the Kim Possible World Showcase Adventure was going, but yeah, an actual attraction-wise, yeah, I think that was it.
Yeah, I don't mean the... Oh, yeah, because it was 2007. I was going to say, I don't mean the animatronics. I mean the attraction itself. But, wow, that opened much later than I thought, because we went in 2007 for the first time. And when you ride something for the first time, you just kind of assume it's been there for years.
But oh, yeah.
It had only been there for months when we rode that. That's interesting.
Yeah.
In my opinion, like, I do like this attraction, but in my opinion, this is kind of an example of how ideas for boat rides had sort of stalled by this point. You're just making a Mexican version of a dark ride, and you're like, we'll just make it a boat ride again, you know, just like Pirates, just like It's a Small World. So as far as the attraction itself, I don't know the word I'm looking for, but like the ride system, that's it. You're just, you've done this before.
Yeah, it's not very grand in scale or anything, but, you know, it's charming, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a lot of the original ride is still there, so it's not like it's drastically changed.
Do you know if El Rio del Tiempo also used a mixture of screens and hard sets?
Yes. I think in the same spots that there are screens now, there were screens before.
Yeah, almost the same scenes. excuse me, because you can watch it on YouTube. And, like, the guy jumping off the cliff, and then Donald, it's just the guy jumping off the cliff.
Yeah, they just added Donald in.
Yeah, it's in a lot of places, it's like they just added cartoons over the existing.
And that makes sense.
Yeah. And I don't know if I can say this word on this show, but in Grand Fiesta Tour, Donald is so horny. He's just, like, he's just like so girl hungry in this current version of this ride.
That is interesting. I've never thought of that.
Every scene he's like fiending after some like Mexican lady.
We always talk about the scene where the guy's sharpening the knives and he doesn't even look remotely close to the same spot where the three caballeros are supposedly nearby. He's not making eye contact.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, and like he looks up and down in like a 3-foot section. So it's like, you know, they told him like Donald's going to be right in front of you. So he's like, ah.
But yeah, that's it. That's it for my little section of the Disney boat ride.
Yeah. Jeremy, bring us home.
Yes, sir. And now we're moving on to my section here, which is the first one in July 5th, 1988. Up until October the 5th, 2014, it had a good run. That was the Maelstrom. Also, just right down the road from Mexico there in the World Showcase Pavilion. And this ride, of course, showcased the spirit of Norway, which you got when from the beginning. Again, an interesting thing because this became such a beloved attraction in the hearts of so many Walt Disney World fans. And I can remember the first time riding it going, all right, you know, whatever. But then it was like the second time I rode it, it became just like a part of me.
Yeah,
I agree. When we rode it for the first time, I already had the feeling like, oh, this is kind of old. You know, it's kind of rickety when it goes up the hill. Everything's kind of bumpy.
Smells bad.
It smells bad. But I do remember getting off it and being like, oh, that had a few surprises. I really enjoyed that.
Well, and how the boat goes backwards and then to that waterfall that looks out into World Showcase, like that is brilliant stuff right there.
I totally agree. Which is probably why they left the exact same ride system when it became something else.
Yeah,
it became that something else on June the 21st of 2016. It became Frozen Ever After. To some controversy there, putting in Frozen, which is in a fictional world, into the real-life Norway setting. But I think over time, those wounds have healed, and I think this is kind of beloved by most fans.
And it's really tastefully done on the outside. That like Royal Summer House greeting area looks really good. I actually was just listening to an interview with Tony Baxter on, I don't know, am I allowed to say a rival podcast? On the Season Pass podcast. And he was saying management really wanted the Elsa's Ice Palace sitting there in World Showcase Lagoon, but the Imagineers really fought to have it be what it is now, and they won somehow.
Thank goodness. So,
yeah, for real. Yeah. Huh. And and the thing about these boats, too, is they didn't change the boats, really, for the new iteration, which I think there was some thought that they would, because I remember the boats... pictures of the boats on Twitter being transported from the Norway Pavilion to wherever I guess they were stored while the refurb was going on. So it was weird seeing boats on I-4. But
yeah, I love these boats. They're so pretty, especially when you think of the ones we've talked about so far. Pirates, It's a Small World, Grand Fiesta Tour. They're all those very generic plastic boats. And then here you get like hand-carved looking wooden Viking ships.
Yeah. I think the thing with Maelstrom is you have to appreciate it just because it's so weird, and it's one of those things that Disney would never build today. I mean, you would go by polar bears and like a giant oil rig, and you know, I'm not 100% certain on the specifics here, but the ride was supposed to open with an actual like lightning effect with like a Tesla rod or something in that part of the ride, but then it never worked.
What part of the ride? Like where you get sent backwards?
Where you go past the oil rig.
Oh, I have never heard that.
Like the very end?
Yeah, with all the, because, you know, it's like a storm there already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never heard that.
I've never heard that either, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
I was thinking about what made this unique at the time. We talked about going backwards, but for Frozen... I think this was the first time a ride was completely gutted and rethemed, and yet it used the same ride system. Like, we definitely have seen overlays like Grand Fiesta Tour.
Was Journey into Imagination, though, before that? Because that uses the same ride system.
Yeah, but it was basically the same ride. Obviously very different, but it used the same character and same
story. Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
I don't know. I guess I was just thinking, like, now this is pretty common with Mission Breakout, even in Credicoaster to an extent. Like, when you ride it, you're like, oh, this is the same ride, but everything about it otherwise is different.
Yeah. Yeah, because I guess they kind of did that with Dream Flight and If You Had Wings and all that, but again, kind of the same ride.
Okay, yeah. Well, then I'm wrong, but I just
It's like, I think you're kind of right.
Yeah.
This is, like, radically different, like, different storyline and everything.
Yeah, I think there's something there. Anyway.
Our next attraction is opened at Disneyland on July the 17th, 1989, and then followed at Walt Disney World October the 2nd, 1992. It's a Tony Baxter-driven attraction that was greenlit by Michael Eisner. The story goes that Michael Eisner took his son, who I think was like 12 or 13 at the time, to Walt Disney Imagineering shortly after he took over as CEO. They were walking around, and the son noticed the model, I guess, for this attraction. At the time, it was called the Zippity Doodah
River Run.
There you go. We had a stroke halfway through there. But then it later became known as Splash Mountain because everything had to be Splash at the time. And Splash Mountain. Again, one of those rides almost on the same level as Pirates in Small World that has just become synonymous with Disney parks.
Yeah. Iconic.
I love this ride. I absolutely love this ride. I think it's so brilliant how log flumes had to have been around before 1989, but it really just upped the whole log flume idea where now you have more than one big drop at the end. You know, there are little drops throughout. I love the drop where it like attaches to basically a roller coaster track and the water is gone for that split second. Love that. And it mixes all these really great dark ride elements too.
Yeah. And, when you ride it, it's like, you know, the worst is at the end, the big drop or whatever. But it's like when you're riding it, you can kind of enjoy it because you can enjoy the dark ride portion because, you know, the worst isn't going to come until way later. It's not going to surprise you. Yeah, you know?
That's true.
And really great musical score. A lot of movement again, especially in the Disneyland version. There's just so many animatronics in there because they all came over from, you know, America Sings.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You guys have that one song that we don't have, thankfully, that that pierces your brain when what is it again? Where she's like, oh.
Oh, at the very end?
Yeah.
The poor Brer Rabbit one?
Yeah, yes. Poor Brer Rabbit. Yes.
That is not in Walt Disney World's version.
Yeah.
I like it.
That hurts my head.
So we've listed a lot of boat rides. I think it's funny that this is really the first boat ride where you're intended to get wet.
Yeah.
You know, like you just think boat ride, it's a water ride.
Really like soaked down to the bone. Like it just penetrates your entire body of with wetness.
It can, for sure. The first time Jeremy and I rode the Disneyland version, we got off thinking, what just happened? Because I'm soaked from head to toe.
And the convenient part about Disneyland is we said, well, let's just go ride Grizzly River Run. And so we walked across the street and rode that.
Yeah.
Why not?
Really cool part about Splash Mountain is how you can see the finale from the train, which I think is brilliant.
Yeah, that's a great point. I still think I've never done that.
The train?
I don't think I've ever ridden the railroad in that portion.
Oh, okay.
That might not be true, but I feel like that's true. Between whatever two stations those are, I don't think I've ever ridden it during that small portion.
In Disneyland, it's New Orleans Square and Toontown train stations.
Okay.
It does it in Magic Kingdom also, right?
Right.
Yeah, Magic Kingdom, yeah. It's Main Street and Frontierland.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, Splash Mountain. And I like how the ride vehicles look like the flumes, if you would, the logs on the flume. The seating is different as well at Disneyland compared to Walt Disney World. You get the 2x2 at Walt Disney World, and you get the single bench, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes at Walt Disney World it's 3x3, depending on depending on what cast member you get.
I think they've stopped that since they put in the lap bars, though.
It's still just one bar across the whole thing, though.
Oh, is it really? Okay.
Yeah. I've seen a few on-ride photos where I'm like, oh, so they, okay. So they put all three of them in there. All right.
I love this attraction, but I don't ride it very much because I hate getting wet.
It's so good, though. It's so good.
It is, but I also don't like squishy shoes.
So tell me this. If a lot of the audio animatronics were brought over from America Sings, does that mean the characters from Song of the South, those were new animatronics built for this ride?
Right. Yeah, those are new ones. Yeah.
Okay. So the others are just like fillers.
Yeah. All the birds and...
Yeah. Supporting awesome cast and crew, stuff. I guess.
Yeah.
All righty. And then we have the Discovery Riverboats. These opened with Animal Kingdom on April the 22nd, 1998. They were renamed the Discovery River Water Taxis in November of that same year. And then they underwent another name change in March of 1999. They were the Radio Disney River Cruise until they closed on August the 21st, 1999. We alluded to these earlier. These were a boat ride around the Discovery Island there at Animal Kingdom, and you really didn't see anything.
Yeah, that's a lot of name changes for an attraction that was open a year and a half.
Which is not true entirely, because I believe there was a dinosaur animatronic or...
A dragon.
Dragon, that was it. Yeah, yeah.
No, it was dinosaur. It was the I don't remember his name. The dinosaur from Dinosaur.
The Iguanodon. Yeah.
Iguanodon, okay. Yeah.
Did it not also have a fire-breathing dragon?
There was a cave that alluded to a fire-breathing dragon.
Oh. Oh my gosh, this ride was lame.
I mean, like, but it was a transportation ride. Like,
no, don't defend this ride, guys.
No, it was supposed to take you from the front of the park to the back. Like, I think now this could have existed.
That's right. That was the problem, right? People got on it thinking it was an attraction, but really it's like, no, this is just a mode of transportation.
Well, yeah, because there were only like four other rides at Animal Kingdom. So people right. waited for an hour to get on this thing that was just transportation, which is why it got the name Water Taxis.
That's right. Trying to make it more clear what they're actually getting on.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, in my mind, this was basically trying to recreate the Swan Boats, which closed for a reason, but the Swan Boats were actually an attraction, not just a mode of transportation. So,
yeah, and to continue the theme, I feel like for all these other rides too, the docks where the loading docks for these boats are still there in Animal Kingdom, and I think like some of the other ones too, they're used for meet and greets.
Yeah, I always see Louie, King Louie, and Baloo at one of them.
Staying at Disney's Animal Kingdom on March the 18th, 1999, we got Kali River Rapids. And its counterpart, which is sort of the same attraction, if you would, at least as far as ride vehicle and experience goes, is the Grizzly River Run over at DCA. And that opened on February the 8th, 2001. So this is an attraction that... is similar to when growing up in the Midwest, we had it called Thunder River at Six Flags, where it's like this giant inflatable donut that you get in and there's seats and you're strapped in and you spin as you go down a rough river, if you would. And the whole point is really to get soaked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A similar ride out here was Bigfoot River Rapids at Knott's Berry Farm, which opened in like, I don't know, 1989 or 90 or something.
Yeah, it's definitely a staple of most amusement parks. But of course, with Disney, you're going to get more of a story. Although I would argue that the story in Walt Disney World is more evident than it is on Grizzly River Run.
Yeah, what's the one in Disney World? It's like logging or something? Like the forest is being cut down?
Yeah, it's a conservation message. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's funny to me is that you can walk all around many parts of DCA and see the rapids. Like there's that one place where you can overlook them as they come by, which really to me makes that whole area just really beautiful and feel like you're in this forest. Whereas in Walt Disney World, I feel like you can walk around all of Animal Kingdom and not even know that ride is there.
That's true.
That is a good point. You know, because when DCA opened, it was not good, and the Grizzly River Run area was kind of the highlight of the park in terms of like beauty.
Yeah, it looks like a North Pacific Northwest woods.
Yeah,
I remember when DCA opened and, you know, all the TGIF and all that kind of promotion that was being put, and the Grizzly Mountain was on everything. I mean, it was that and the Sun Wheel. And those were the two things that you got on every promotional video.
Yeah, the Grizzly Mountain was like the icon of the park.
Yeah, I mean, I have a set of shot glasses, or excuse me, toothpick holders from 2014, and it has four icons, and one of them is still the Grizzly Mountain.
Yeah. So it's funny how still there and pretty unchanged.
I was going to say, it's funny how things evolve around it, but that still remains.
Yeah.
And Cali River Rapids, one of only like two or three attractions at Walt Disney World I've still never ridden to this day.
Yeah, I've never been on it either.
You're not missing much.
Well, it's like what you said with Splash Mountain. I don't want to get completely soaked.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's just no good time. Because even when it's hot and you get wet, sure, you dry, but then you have that weird, like, dry rot feel to your clothes.
You're crusty.
Yeah. Oh, and I made it a vow in my life to never be crusty. Alrighty, and our final attraction that we're going to talk about, our final boat, if you would, is the Navi River Journey. It opened on March the 27th, 2017. Wow, hard to believe that's coming up on 3 years already that Pandora is going to be open.
I was thinking the exact opposite. When you said that, I was like, it's only been 3 years?
Really? Oh, see, I still feel like Pandora is like fresh. But anyways, it's there. This is a nice little boat ride through the Navi River, I guess you could say. You see some of the animal life that you see in the film. And then it culminates in the Shaman of Song, and she serenades you with a Navi, I guess, blessing song.
I'm certainly blessed every time I hear it.
Agreed. This has become sort of an iconic audio animatronic. In terms of Disney feats, because it's very impressive looking.
Yeah, probably one of the most impressive ever.
Still, oh yeah. You almost get the sense that they had this idea for an incredible audio animatronic, and then were like, how can we incorporate this? I know, boat ride. Like, I feel like they had to have started with the audio animatronic.
Yeah, there's some good visuals here, and, you know, I think a lot of people would argue it's not worth the wait time it commands, but I think once it settles in a few years from now and the wait is like, I don't know, maybe 20 or 30 minutes, it'll be just like a nice little relaxing thing you can enjoy with no problem.
I think so too. I think it's really pretty. I like how the music is missing at the beginning of the attraction and it slowly comes into play more and more the deeper into the forest, if you will, that you get.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are a lot of things to love about it, and I love it more the more I ride it. But I agree. Compared to Fly the Passage, I can see where you might be underwhelmed.
This is the Smuggler's Run to the Rise of the Resistance.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yep. All right, well, those are the boat rides. And there are a lot, but other than, you know, two or three exceptions, I do feel like they all share a lot of similarities. Because really, what can you do with boat rides? But I will say, if we were talking about international parks, I do think, from what I've seen, that Pirates of the Caribbean, Sunken Treasure, something... in Shanghai has been sort of a game changer as far as boat rides go. Have you been to Shanghai, Guy?
I have not, but I was going to bring up Sinbad's Storybook Journey over at Tokyo Disney Sea, which is a boat ride that is very cute and colorful and storybook-like and full of animatronics. It's a modern classic, I think.
Yeah, I've always heard of that. I guess I didn't even realize it was a boat ride.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And it's got a score by Alan Menken, so...
That's right. That's right.
This has a really classic Disney feel.
It does make you wonder what the future of boat rides will be at Disney parks. Because, I mean, we went from Grizzly River Run in 2001 all the way to Navi River Journey in 2017 before we got a new ride system. Obviously, there were some overlays in those years.
Well, now Frozen Ever After is being cloned for Hong Kong Disneyland and Disneyland, Walt Disney Studios Paris. So,
yeah, well... I can kind of see that. If they make it a little bit smoother,
and,
you know, you can still do the same ride while making it just better and more modern and not feel as old. I'm hoping that's what they do. Yeah. Anyway, who knows? We'll see what the next... I don't believe there are any boat rides planned for the U.S. parks that have been announced, but you got to think that they've been, boat rides have been such a staple that another one will come eventually. But anyway,
they're such a people mover kind of thing. They're just the capacity is so high. You would hope that they would want to build more.
It's true. In fact, they sometimes overestimate how high the capacity is, which is when all of your boats get backed up.
Yeah.
On Pirates of the Caribbean or Small World. Oh gosh, what scene was I in? I don't remember what scene, but it was one of the scenes in Pirates where it was backed up so far where I was like, it just like, just know, seeing what scene we were in and realizing we were already backed up, I'm like, oh, we're going to be here a while. It's going to be a while.
Or they put so many on that they sink.
Yeah.
Wait, what are we talking about?
Too many people. People capacity.
Like Mike Fink kill boats, or is there a story I don't know about modern?
The Jungle Cruise just sunk a boat.
That's right. Oh, no. What'll be next? Oh, no. All right. Well, Guy, thank you so much for joining us. We always love having you on. Do you want to remind our listeners where they can find you?
Touringplans.com or at Guy Selga on Twitter. GUYSELGA.
There you go. And listeners, you, of course, can always find us on Instagram and Twitter as well at Mad Chatters, or send your emails to comments@madchatters.net. That's it for us. Stay safe out there. We'll see you soon.
Take a little time to find the magic in every day.